Hi, I'm Nicole Ferraro, and this is The Divide, a podcast from Light Reading exploring the ongoing digital divide, why and where it still exists, and what needs to be done to get people everywhere connected to reliable, high-speed internet. Today, I am joined by Carrie Hahn, Senior Vice President for Commercial Strategy at Calix. We discuss the federal government's $42 billion BEAD program, including the work that Calix is doing internally to prepare its broadband service provider customers to participate, and why he's advocating for BEAD funding to go to local providers. We also discuss the challenges that local providers might face in participating in BEAD, possible solutions, and more. Carrie, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Nicole.
It is my pleasure. Always happy to chat with people from Calix. Before we get started, why don't you just tell me a bit about your role at the company?
Sure, Nicole. I'm the Senior Vice President of Commercial Strategy at Calix. I have a number of commercial operations roles, but one of the remits and why I'm here is I also lead the Calix funding team. And this is a team focused at helping our customers. We call them broadband service providers, BSP. So if I let that slip, hopefully you in the audience will know what I meant. And how this process works, it's about, we've done 400 plus consults over the last few years. And we meet directly with the BSP leadership team to do a couple of things. One, help them understand how the public funding process works. So there's been a number of public, state, federal funding programs, BEAD, obviously being the biggest and the most recent, to help them kind of understand how that process works. A lot of the, as we'll describe, or I'm sure we'll get into, the bulk of the Calix customer base is rural, is sort of what we call tier threes. And so they don't have the team that's dedicated towards, putting in funding applications, managing their way through the process. So they don't have necessarily the expertise to do so. I'm not, certainly not making fun of them. It's also, they only have so many priorities in the day. So we help them understand that, as well as if they, through the process, we identify funding gaps for them. We do have a small Rolodex of private equity or venture capital providers that we do kind of a matchmaking process with. So in all of these scenarios, there's no quid pro quo to this. We don't ask for money. We don't look for money. It's all, I'll say out of the goodness of our heart. But obviously the hope is that these BSPs will have a warm spot for Calix if and come time for them to be, thinking about their longer term business operations, that they think of Calix as somebody to call on. So that's kind of the main remit of what this team does and what we've been doing for the last about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, very cool. And you point to something I was going to mention, which is, we're going to talk about the BEAD program, the Broadband Equity Access and Deployment Program, $42.5 billion, the big guy. So I know, different people I talk to on this podcast, different stakeholders have different place in their involvement in this program. So for Calix, as you just said, part of your role is working with your customers on helping them get that funding and hoping that they then, come back and include you on that application later on. But I think Calix is also getting involved in BEAD in a few different ways. You guys had manufacturing announcements, I think, last year. So what is the BEAD focus overall look like inside of Calix right now?
For sure. We've been working on preparing for BEAD for, the last, I'd say, 18 months pretty in earnest and gearing up the team, for the next 24 months as well. So, yeah, a couple different dimensions of that, Nicole. So one, obviously being a Buy America, Build America, Buy America. I always get it backwards. It's BABA.
Yeah. Another ridiculous acronym. Right? It's all sounds silly. Yeah.
Yes, I think somebody was laughing to themselves when they knew that one. BEAD,
exactly.
I can get that. So that we've expanded our manufacturing of products in the U.S. to ensure that we had the full set to help our customers build out the network that would make them compliant with the BEAD funding requests. That was something we announced, I think, mid towards late of last year at a manufacturing site in one of the manufacturing sites we have in Michigan. We also have sites, I think, in New Jersey that are part of that compliance as well. And we'll, that will be something we'll continue to look at, but we're at the moment ready to go as we speak. We've also expanded a couple other things. We do broadband performance testing, which we've done We did, I think, 300 plus million automated latency tests last year, FCC latency tests last year, and almost 20 million FCC compliant speed tests. So it's, you know, this will be part of BEAD as it's been part of all of them. So it's kind of a process that you don't have to learn how to build on your own. And then we've had some that it's a relatively recent announcement that we're pretty proud of, this partnership with Ready.net. So Ready.net is a software provider, solution provider that has been partnering on one side with the states to help them. It's a great, easy to use tool, a platform, I should say, that takes in all the latest, not just FCC data, but also they supplement it with other data sources to create a comprehensive, easy to use map of what is served, unserved, underserved, such that the states can keep track of and understand how the if people are being compliant and have it easy to use. The flip side of that platform as well is what we use and through this exclusive partnership is to work with our BSPs to help them in that process. So they have, I think, I like the analogy that I've heard used is that it's a bit like TurboTax for BEAD. So there's a list of questions you sort of walk through. You say, okay, this is the area I'm interested in. And then it has a list of questions that they ask you and it builds out at the end the makings of the business case. So it's not the full business case, but it's, you know, 80% of the way there, which is 80% of nothing, you know, starting from zero, which is what they would have had without the tool. So this is now, as I mentioned, those 400 plus consults, this is now one of the sort of big tools we bring in our toolbox, and we go into those conversations to help them sort of visualize and then, you know, make the first couple of steps down the process. And then the last point that I'll make that I referenced a little bit earlier is we've also worked with a number of private equity providers that are at the ready to help with the 25% match. So this BEAD in general is, I like to say, it's taken what was uneconomical and makes it economical. And there's lots of money available when things are economical. And so these folks are more than happy to be part of this process longer term. Broadband is a great investment, just, you know, in all senses. And so the idea that they're sort of helping get over the hurdle of building out the network, it sort of greatly broadens the interest of a market that we can invest in.
Yeah, that's actually pretty interesting. And I think leads well into what we're going to talk about next, which is I know that you have been pushing for BEAD funds to go as much as possible to local providers, right? And well, we're going to talk about this throughout the conversation. But one thing I think about with regard to BEAD is, you know, some of the requirements might be hard to meet, one of which is that matching requirement. And so the involvement of private equity firms, I think, is sounds like a great way to help with that. But before I get ahead of myself, sure, why don't I let you actually tell me what your hope is here? What do you think of when you're referring to smaller local providers? What types of providers are you talking about? And why, in your view, in Calix's view, are they the ideal providers for the BEAD program?
Yeah, thanks, Nicole. So there's a broad range of them. I'll reference co-ops a lot, but it's not just because they're good examples, and I have good examples to talk to you. But you know, the tribal communities, municipalities, electric co-ops, telephone co-ops, private, you know, small private, you know, mom and pop isn't quite the right term, but, you know, companies that are local to their geography. Because if you think of BEAD, or like would think of BEAD, the intent here is it's a bit more of the rural digital divide. So it's places where, as I was describing, it was uneconomical to build, where this makes it more accessible. And I think that, you know, there has been, you know, in some of the prior federal fundings, a disproportionate amount of it has gone to larger sort of tier one, as we call them, providers that, you know, tend to have focused in cities. You know, they focused in cities. There's density and easier to pass more people with whatever it is that you build that network with. And that there's a couple of reasons, you know, a handful of reasons I like to say why we think the local BSPs are interesting. So first off, they typically have a long history in the community. So I described electric co-ops, you know, some of these telephone co-ops, these are companies that were established 100 plus years ago, 80 plus years ago, to build out what, you know, somewhat similarly, what the current market wouldn't provide. So these folks didn't have electricity, amazingly enough, 100 years ago. And so the communities got together, created a co-op to build it for themselves. They're also nimble. So they're smaller, so they can innovate and react to their community needs. It's not a one size fits all that is looking to, you know, be that is difficult to implement, but then, you know, it's sort of you get what you get for a long period of time. They also understand, and part of that is that they understand their communities. They're in the communities. They know that it's not just the speed. You know, that obviously what BEAD is asking for is to serve an unserved, which is the up and down speed rates that they're looking for, but that there's more to that service that they look to provide, that they're looking to grow long-term value in the communities. As I said, they've been around for 80 to 100 years. They don't intend, you know, this isn't something that they're going to flip quickly. They intend to be around and hand it down to generations. And I kind of summarize this all into, there's a couple comment if I can make. I was speaking at a conference in DC, which seemed to be a bit more of a lobbying conference than I'm used to going to. It was interesting because lots of discussions were around, you should give money to the tier one providers because it's almost the easy button. You can trust them, you know what you're dealing with and the like, sort of implying that they run the business better. And it couldn't be further from the truth. So the thing is with a lot of these local providers, they're like highly professional operators. So, and this is demonstrated as I've described with some of the NPS scores that these folks have. So we have an example of Tom Bigby. We have numbers of them above 75%. And if you don't know, the NPS score goes from minus 100 to 100. Mm-hmm. Minus 100 is somebody you hate. Plus 100 is, you know, off the charts. And Tom Bigby is an example we used. I used it on stage. That's at 94%. That's like a cult. Yeah. The average telecom is like, I think about 7% in some of the large, you know, the only ways you can get to 7% when you have folks that are above 50 is you have folks in the negative. So right. This means that they're telling their friends how much they hate their service. And these folks are the opposite. Some of these co-ops are generating lots of money for their co-op members. So, you know, mm-hmm. they take the excess money they make and they funnel it back into the community. So it's great in the sense that their community is getting great service. They're dedicated to it, but as well, you know, it's a viable economic engine to the local community that, you know, money comes, it stays there and gets reinvested back into the community.
Yeah, that makes complete sense to me. And I think, you know, the BEAD program started as something that was geared toward, you know, municipalities, smaller companies and such. Over time, it has amassed a set of rules and regulations that might make it harder for those types of companies to apply, to participate, to sustain their networks over time. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on if you share those concerns, what aspects of the BEAD program might be too difficult for those smaller providers, and any advice that you're giving those providers or even the NTIA on making it easier.
Yeah, it's a great question, Nicole. Thank you. Because it starts off in these things, you know, I can imagine and what limited exposure I've had to these regulations and laws being created is, you know, it's a sausage making machine that has lots of movements and shakes to it. So I would credit the NTIA for being receptive. They've been reactive, I think even more timely than folks had anticipated they would be. And it's been, I think that's been pretty positive. So as I mentioned earlier, the application process is complex. It's not insurmountable by any stretch, but if you don't have a team dedicated to it, and this is, you know, as with a lot of these situations, they talk to the folks that are dedicated to doing it, who don't intentionally make it complex, but they do add complexity to it. That's, you know, part of, as I described, the Ready.net partnership is our attempt to work with our partners with our BSPs to help them simplify the process. Another example that we mentioned, the 25%, there was a line of credit requirement that has been changed. I think it's still moving a little bit, but I use as an example of one where it was written in the first instance to be, you have to be a very large company that works with only the top tier banks, which is, you know, not rural, not anyone in BEAD. And most of the banks in the U.S. didn't, unclear, but it didn't seem as if they would be able to provide the source. And there was, you know, a lot of the smaller providers got together, different agencies, associations wrote in about it to the NTIA saying, hey, listen, this is almost insurmountable for some of these folks. It seems like a simple and easy thing to say is, hey, you need to have a set of money held back to ensure that you're, you know, meeting your deadlines, but the ask was too high. And I will say that, you know, part of the proof in the pudding, so to speak, of the, what the fear is that there was, I think, about 15 states, if I get the numbers right, where more than 50% of the federal funding went to largest providers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, there, it's a little bit, you know, and I know BEAD, there's more money, and so there's the opportunity for more complexity, and the complexity is, you know, certainly points in the favor of the largest providers, and that's, you know, kind of the issue is we need to be have more flexibility in the process, because I don't think with BEAD, even more so than any of the prior funding, is the intent to target the, you know, large shares of the funding towards the, you know, NFL city type providers.
Right. Yeah. With regard to the NTIA, you're right. I think they have been pretty receptive on the letter of credit issue, on the Build America, Buy America rules. I didn't want to have
Nicely
to say
done.
The, thank you. I took my time so I wouldn't have to say the acronym. But I'm curious to know from the small providers that you talk to, that you work with, are you hearing like trepidation about applying? Have any of them, were they planning to, and now they're not, or what are you getting from?
I think that's probably our biggest fear, and this is where we started when I described, you know, the 18 months ago is, and we had we have a an annual conference called Connections, in that's every fall. It's 3,000 or so people come, mostly lots of our customers. We have a funding day where we have a whole series of conversations that, you know, the funding team puts together, all targeted at helping the BSPs get to funding. And so that was a big focus last October in the conference from us, was to get a sense of, you know, what are you thinking about BEAD, and do you see all, you know, here's all of the people and resources available to help you with it. And there is, in a number of, you know, almost every breakfast, lunch, drinks event, I would find, you know, local providers, and this is what I would ask them about, you know, like, hey, mm-hmm. what do you think about BEAD? The big fear, and I think it's less so than it was 6 months ago, but still disproportionately true, is they're on the sideline. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of a wait and see. There's one is it's complex and I got a million things going on, which is, you know, everybody's everyday life. And then secondarily, is that they just don't, you know, they think they have time. They kind of understand the process, and this is what we do in the consult to help them understand for their state what the process will look like.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the big fear, is that, you know, since they don't have the team of folks that are dedicated and focused on doing this, that, you know, that they have to take the initiative themselves. And so, you know, a lot of what we're doing, both with the ReadyNet partnership and with our outreach to our customers, is to sort of keep reminding them that, hey, listen, this is a generational opportunity. And you either take advantage of it, or you allow, you know, competitors you don't want to be in the footprint right next door. And that's, you know, not going to be good for that community, and probably not good for you either.
Yeah, absolutely. The other issue that might make it harder for smaller providers to participate in BEAD is the expected demise of the Affordable Connectivity Program.
Sure.
You and I are talking on April 16th, so we are in the final month of full ACP funding. We will go to partial ACP funding in May if nothing is done to refund the program before then. There is a $7 billion bill in Congress that's been sitting there since January. There is now a discharge petition to move that bill to a vote, because it technically has enough support to pass if it were to come up for a vote. But it seems a little unlikely that that's going to happen. Who knows? This episode will run a week from us talking, so anything could change. But if the ACP goes away, that makes it a lot harder for providers of any size, but certainly small providers in high cost, low income areas, to participate in BEAD and be able to say, yeah, we're going to be able to afford to run this network. I was listening to the US Telecom Connectivity Forum last week and heard a local provider say that at least 50% of her service area is eligible for ACP, probably more, and that she's already in a high cost area. So the whole thing becomes untenable without that federal benefit. So I've been worried about what this is going to mean for BEAD and, of course, for the digital divide in general and the 23 million families that are enrolled in the ACP. But I'd love to know from your perspective if you see that as a hindrance to small providers, local providers participating in the program as well.
Yeah, for sure, Nicole. And you, I'm going to bow to your expertise on ACP. I'm not well versed in the makings of what's going on beyond that. I think a lot of the providers were hopeful, perhaps naively so, that it would get extended. Like they've got to do this because there's sort of two pieces to it. One is the existing program, as you described, and then there's the what are we going to do in the future builds. And the future builds, it dents the economic picture. So like the business cases we were describing, you know, if 10, 15, 50% of the footprint that you're looking to build is going to be low income, it's not going to be reasonable to assume you're going to get the kind of rates that you know, I'm just being very rational in a business case sort of sense. Yeah. You're not going to get the rates that you would be looking for from the other areas. It makes the hurdle a little bit harder. The trick of sorts too is that, you know, I think also for the ones where it exists now, you know, the thing about for a lot of them, which the BSPs that are starting, they're scrambling a bit is, you know, because they were naively hopeful this would get extended, is that you do receive all of the ACP recipients, not all, but almost all of them receive a bill from a service provider. So like if my bill goes from $30 to $60, I'm not saying, oh, government, you took away $30. I'm saying local provider, why did you double the cost of money? Which they're not going to do. So that sort of puts them in a bind because, you know, they have to pay for the equipment. They're still servicing, they're providing support, all of which, and, you know, and these are their community members, as I was describing before. They don't want to be known as the, you know, thoughtless company that took away what is sort of a basic need of their footprint. And so, yeah, it's a little tricky there. We and they were having conversations about, is there something we can do to sort of slim down the cost base of how we can provide that service, maybe remove some of the features that make it more costly. But it's not been well thought through because I think a lot of folks, as I was describing, were naively hopeful.
Yeah. I'm also wondering if, you know, you mentioned the private equity issue as a solution before for the matching fund. I wonder if you see that as an option for an ACP private equity fund type of thing.
Yeah, it's a tough one because they're a bit more black and white as they tend to be than as you can think. That doesn't mean it isn't. So like they're also attuned to what's going on because there's a nimbleness that they have even more so than most to create some sort of reaction. So yes, that's, you know, some of the conversations I've been in, we have been with private equity folks about what they're thinking about doing with before and after ACP. It's not I don't know that they think of it as an opportunity per se, so much as they think of it as a, hey, we can take these particular types of actions that we think will position us to be more competitive than others. So I don't think they're thinking, hey, this is a great thing to go after, because I don't think anyone thinks that. But I do think that they're, you know, they're like, hey, we can be nimble and flexible, and it might be a way for us to sort of differentiate our portfolio companies in a way that makes it, you know, sort of less impactful.
Makes sense. Okay. So the government should solve the ACP issue. That is the best solution. And
they should do a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, moving on to local governments, I'm wondering if you've been reviewing state BEAD plans. And if so, if there are any states that stand out as particularly friendly to local and smaller ISPs in terms of how they're writing their plans, and or conversely, are there any state plans that concern you in terms of their rules with regard to perhaps appealing to the larger providers?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Nicole. So part of what we do is the funding team is to connect with all of the, as much as we can, with all the state associations. So we, I think, you've met someone on the team. That's part of what they do, and their team does every day, is to reach out to the states to help them understand the some of the issues that our customers face, as well as make connections with those customers. Not that they can't do that themselves, but anything to continue the conversations is great. I think there's a few, let's say, to be fair, I think almost all of them like the intent. So I think they all want to make it rural. They all want to make it local. They all aspire to keep it in state. There is a bit of it sometimes is a little bit harder. And so let's say I think some might reach for the easy button, as I described earlier, more so than others. I think some of them, I think Texas has a good one. They created a fund, I believe, to help with the 25% match. So as opposed to looking for the market to take care of it for them, which, they take care of tier ones can take care of the market easier for themselves than tier threes can. This was a way to make it simpler and easier for the rural providers to apply. I think North Dakota is another one. They're, I think, the most connected and digitally equal states. They're almost entirely served by local or regional players. It's they've been sort of semi uneconomical since the word go. And so folks that are local have found a way. Yeah. And I think that they, in part with that, when they're thinking about the state plan, that's kind of the people that they're talking with. So, not that they have the lobbyists that some of the folks you're mentioning have, but they certainly do have the connections in the communities to set up those conversations. And then maybe on the flip side, and I don't want to name states because I'm not that person, but the 15 states that I described, we're also a little bit leery of them as well, because I do think that the easy button was at hand for them before they hit it. We're a little bit fearful, and so we're sort of pushing our efforts in those states in particular. First off, to see for some of them, let's say they're a bit more urban than some others, but in any case, the idea is to sort of make sure that the local rural providers are in the conversations with those state agencies to make sure that they're hearing their needs and concerns.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing for a while. Like, just get in front of your state broadband office. If you're a local ISP, make those relationships, get in front of them, get to know everybody. So I want to let you go in a moment, but the BEAD program is supposed to be a generational, once in a lifetime effort to close the digital divide, get broadband everywhere that it isn't in this country, and hopefully make it affordable for people who can't afford it now. We'll see. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on how we sustain these networks over time, whether that's thoughts on the Universal Service Fund or otherwise. Just, I'm sure you guys at Calix are thinking in the future, since you're going to be in these networks. So love your thoughts on how we keep this going.
Yeah, so I do think that one of the nice things about how BEAD has been focused is with a bit more focus on fiber. Fiber isn't always the economical answer. And again, as I was describing it, it has taken what was uneconomical and makes it more economical, which means that there is more of the world where fiber can make sense. And the reason I belabor fiber a little bit is because it's not quite future-proof, but it's generational future-proof. So like the fiber optic has more than enough capacity to support, probably 100 years worth of content that could flow through it. The limiting factors are the boxes at the ends of the at the glass cable. So the bulk of the money when you build out a network, it's probably about, I think, 80 to 85% of it is, digging holes in the ground and laying cables. If you've built 85% of your network with fiber, you've sort of future-proofed that piece of it, as long as you don't go in and break it, and that's, you can fix that, but nonetheless, those are mistakes that happen. And then the second bit to it is just thinking through the future proof, and this is more of the conversation we have, less so about let's say community and governmental interaction, more so about how we speak with our customers to think about it, is, hey, you want to build yourselves, think of yourselves as a platform and a service provider where you're nimble. And that whatever you build allows you to have as much flexibility as you can, so that you have the ability to provide for, let's say ACP type customers, as well as others that are going to be looking for more services, and to be able to provide and satisfy both of those groups off the same, let's say, fiber footprint.
Gotcha. All right. Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation with you. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. I hope that you'll come back and chat with us again in the future. Good luck with all of this.
Thank you, Nicole. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you again, Kerry, for joining me. Thank you as well to our producer for this episode, Mark Pagan. Be sure to subscribe to the Light Reading Podcast for more episodes of The Divide, as well as interviews and insights from the Light Reading team. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.